And open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. We're going to be looking at verses 12 through 22. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 12 through 22. You remember from last week we talked about how God makes everything appropriate in its time, how there's a time to be born, a time to die, time to be at peace, time to be at war, that everything in God's timing works out for our ultimate good because he's going to redeem us and renew us and make us according to his image. There's a lot of different ways we could look at this next section of text from verses 12 through the end of the chapter. Just a lot of different ways we could look at it, but I've narrowed it down to one little sliver of the options, and that's to look at it from the viewpoint of it being an explanation of who we are and why God would make everything appropriate in his time in our lives because we're created in his image. The writer of Ecclesiastes, I believe Solomon, is trying to get us to realize what life would be like if we did not have the Spirit of God in us, if we just divorced ourselves from God entirely in his purposes, we'd be mere animals. Justice and judgment would be irrelevant. There'd be wickedness involved in every aspect of our lives. We'd be just another created being just living out our existence with no future, no destiny. And we know that's not true. Solomon, I believe, knew it wasn't true. His father David had written Psalm 8, which is that classic passage about who man is and how God has created him with special abilities to rule over the universe, and how we have been given that because we're created in God's image with the status and with the authority to be able to do that. Pastor Dave said something in his time leading up to prayer, basically that Jesus was stronger than the mask that we put on. Remember him saying that? Why do we put on masks? I think this passage has a lot to say with why. We all know we were created and designed to be much more beautiful than we presently are. And because we know that we're not projecting who we really know we should be, we cover ourselves up with all sorts of masks, trying to make sure that nobody sees us for who we really are. When in reality, everybody else knows how they really are, so they really know how you really are, so it's really pretty stupid that we put on masks, but we continue to do it. Listen very, very carefully as Christy Plemons comes and reads to us Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 12 through 22, realizing that we have a very, very narrow sliver of the options that we're going to be looking at today, but we'll take a look at one of the things that he brings up in this passage.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please stand. Beginning with verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. I also thought, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place, all come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? You may be seated.
I don't know if you noticed or not, but the writer of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, gives two questions there at the very, very end. He says at the end of verse 21, or actually in verse 21, who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? And then verse 22, so I saw that there is nothing better for the man to enjoy his work because that is a lot. Who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Those are the two questions that I think we need to take a look at, and I think that we can answer, if you're a Christian, by saying that Christ knows and Christ understands. But I want to begin with a little phrase and a little saying, actually a poem that I heard about 20 years ago, and it's stuck in my mind ever since, and I've always wanted to use it in a sermon, but never found an appropriate place. Well, today is your lucky day. These are three monkeys who have come together to contemplate us, human beings. Here's what the poem says. Three monkeys sat in a coconut tree discussing things as they're said to be. Said one to the others, "Now listen, you two, there's a rumor in town, but it can't be true. Why, the very idea is an awful disgrace that man descended from our noble race. No monkey ever deserted his wife, starved her babies, and ruined her life. And you've never known of a mother monkey to leave her babies with others to bunk, or pass them on from one to another till hardly is known who is their mother? And another thing you'll never see is a monkey build a fence around a coconut tree, and let the coconuts go to waste, forbidding all other monkeys to taste. Why, if I put a fence around my tree, starvation would force you to steal from me. Here's another thing a monkey won't do. Go out at night and get on a stew, drink corn liquor and homebrew too. Use a gun or a club or a knife and take some other monkey's life. Yes, man descended, that ornery cuss, but brother, he didn't descend from us." Folks, monkeys do exactly what God created monkeys to do. We alone, humanity alone, of all creation, fails to do what he was created to do. And all of us know it. That's why we hide behind the masks. Question I want to look at, if you want to follow along in the sermon outline, you should have received one in your service folder. I had one. There it is. Should look like this. Here's the question to be answered today. And Lord, I pray that I can answer this question. Out of hundreds of themes that could be derived from this text, what does Solomon have to say about mankind? Now listen, there's a lot of different things we could talk about from this text. You've heard them, I'm sure, as Christy read this text. Some of these are going to be covered later. Some of them we've already covered, and that's why I've chosen not to focus on those. But the one that I've focused on, I really think is a general overall implied theme throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, but especially in this particular text. I believe Solomon is showing us that without God, we are mere animals, destined to the same fate and oblivion to which animals are ignorantly headed. God created mankind to be the pinnacle of his creation, created in his image, endued with his spirit, and gifted so as to be able to commune with his creator, judicate like his creator, create like his creator, and love his creator is love. Instead, mankind, separated from God, has fallen to the state of a mere animal. There are fundamentally, I'd like to read this quote just from Ravi Zacharias. It should be immediately following the statement that you had there. There are fundamentally four questions that every thinking human being must answer. And I can remember as a kid always going over these questions. It seemed like I was destined to become a pastor even though I fought it for 33 years of my life. I was destined to become a pastor because I asked these questions all the time. And my other classmates in school when I was 10, 11, 12 years old look at me like I was from Mars. Like, who would think of that? Well, I did. Maybe because I was on that tractor just going up and down the field and hoeing up and down. I had nothing else to think about. We didn't have computers on board our tractors then. We didn't have GPSs and stereos. We just had the starter and the accelerator and the brake. Bob Haviland remembers those days. Yeah, Bob goes, yeah, I remember those days. These are the four fundamental questions, reading Rabbi Zechariah's quote, that every thinking human being must answer. The questions of origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. How did my life first come into be? What is the purpose of my life? How may I choose between right and wrong? And what happens to me when I die? When these questions are individually answered, the questions must be seen to correspond with reality. These questions are then collectively tested for coherence. That is, do they contradict each other? Answers that correspond with reality and fit into a coherent system provide the individual a worldview by which all of life's choices may then be made. And folks, that's the reality we need to come to terms with. Who are we? What's our purpose? How do we know what's right and wrong in life? And where are we headed? And the writer of Ecclesiastes is desperately trying to get us to wake up to the reality of not asking those questions and the reality of what our lives are going to be like if we don't even bother trying to find out the answers to those questions. will be mere animals. That's why the word for the day is purpose. Word for the day is purpose. I don't know if you thought about this or not, and some of you may have gone through my Christ in the Pentateuch series, or maybe you were even here when I went through that series about 3 years ago. We went through this because it was one of the things we looked at in the book of Genesis, which is the first book of the Pentateuch. And we looked at, what is man? What is his purpose? Why was he designed? And folks, one of the things that I said during that sermon, and I'm still holding to it, is if we would understand who we are, if we would understand why we're created, if we would understand what's right and wrong for us to do in our lives, if we would understand what our destiny is, it would eliminate the problems with abortion in this country, it would eliminate the problem with gay rights, it would eliminate all the problems with weird marriages that are trying to be taking place, it would eliminate all the place of animals and animal rights, it would eliminate bullying and all those kind of things in our lives. But because we don't know who we are, and because we don't know what's right and wrong, because we fail to understand who we are and what our destiny is, we struggle with all those issues. In fact, I'm convinced that Congress, no matter how many laws are going to pass, will never really be able to solve the problem until people come to the knowledge of who they are at the very core of their being. You are an individual who's been created in God's image, breathed with His Spirit to bear His likeness, to be His ambassadors on the planet, and to rule this planet so that God's will that is done in heaven might come here to earth. That's your destiny. That's your calling. That's your purpose. You're not here to earn a wage and feed your family. That's important as part of your calling. But that's not it. The Shorter Catechism of the Westminster Confession of Faith says this. It asks this question. What is man's chief end? And the answer is, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And we best glorify God when we know who we are, and we start to live accordingly. And it can only happen when we have the Spirit of God dwelling in us. And we can only have the Spirit of God dwelling in us, allowing us to have full expression of what it means to be God-breathed when we've invited Christ into our lives. It can't happen. We have, because of our sin, because of our rebellion, we've pushed God out of our lives. And it's only by accepting Christ and saying, I realize that I'm not living up to the destiny I know is part of my life. I know I'm not the person I should be. I know I'm not living up to the calling that I have on my heart and on my mind. And by inviting Christ to come in and be Lord and Master of your life, you now have a chance to live out that full destiny, that full calling, that full purpose in your life. The amazing thing I see, and this really came home to me this week, is that God desperately wants us for us to be men and women. And we're not. In fact, the one term that God calls us, probably more than any other of the descriptive terms that God calls us, is what? Sheep. Now, I don't know if you've thought about a sheep, and you've thought about a fully alive human being who's really living up to the noble calling they are, but folks, there's not much of a comparison there. Would you rather be a sheep, or a fully alive, fully engaged, purposeful, fully intellectually alive person? And yet the God of the universe sent His Son as a sheep to make us fully alive as humans. In fact, just hours before He died in order to seal the deal that might happen. Do you remember what happened with Jesus when He was dragged before Pilate after being beaten? Here He was with a royal robe on, just absolutely laid out. Remember the Passion of the Christ? And Pilate is trying desperately to get Jesus not crucified. And he points to Jesus and he says what? Behold the man. The only man that has ever walked the planet in the full expression of the glory of God. And what was he doing? Sacrificing himself to make life better for the rest of the planet. Do you understand that if the people in this room alone understood their full calling and purpose in life and was willing to sacrifice for the sake of the planet like Jesus did, we could change this world in about 3 years. But we're willing to just kind of relax and be mere animals and be instinctual about our decision making rather than making our decisions based upon who we really are, who we're called to be. Okay, here we go. 3 points, then 4 applications. What does Solomon saying about mankind in Ecclesiastes 3:12 through 22? Man was created in God's image to cheerfully, diligently, and fearfully do good and worship God. Verses 12 through 14. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live. That's why I'm such a supporter of a few good men. They understood this part about doing good. Verse 13, and that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toil, this is a gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken away. God does it so that men will revere him. One of the passages that I've come to really appreciate over the last 10 years, especially as I went through the book of Isaiah, is I believe it's in Isaiah 66, verses 1 and 2. This is the one I will esteem, saith the Lord, the one who trembles at my word. God has said that you are a special creation, that mankind was the highest of everything that he created in those first 6 days. You have been given special gifts and privileges. You have been given special authority to rule over the rest of creation. And he topped it all off by breathing into your life his spirit so that you would have rational capabilities, creative capabilities, justice capabilities, compassion capabilities, mercy capabilities, love capabilities that the rest of creation can only dream about. In fact, their dreams are very short because they have a hard time dreaming about it. And what do we do with all this giftedness? Yikes. 2. God reveals to fallen man that he has failed to be what he was created to be. Verse 18. I also thought, from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Why would we think that we're like the animals? Because we, of all the rest of creation, are the only ones endued with the ability to know what ought to be and what we really are. Listen to this quote by William Hazlitt. Man is the only animal that laughs and weeps, for he is the only animal that is struck with the difference between what things are and what they ought to be. Don't you think about that at all? Don't you think about what you could be if you just got rid of this habit? What you could be like if you could just master this discipline? Come on! My mom was exactly right about me. I'm a jack of all trades and master of none. I can play the tuba, I can play the trumpet, I can play the guitar, I play a little bit of mandolin, a little bit of banjo, because I used to sell these things, so I had to learn just enough in order to sell it. But I can't play any of them good, but I can play great in my head. If I could just master the skills necessary, if you allowed me to absorb the necessary skills, I could put Al Hurt and all those trumpet players to shame. A lot of you are going, Al who? It's another generation. Why? Why am I not a great trumpet player? I lack discipline. I've got the aperture for it. I was a tuba major in college. Yes, I was a tuba major in college. I can play the trumpet. I can make it sound. I can have a good tone. I had one. In fact, the guy who was ahead of Doc Severinsen, we probably don't know who he is either. He was a trumpet player for the Tonight Show for years and years and years. But a guy that actually had the job before Doc Severinsen was my instructor. And in fact, Doc Severinsen one night was asked who was a better trumpet player than him. And he said, well, Jerry Franks, a little guy nobody knows about in Warsaw, Indiana. That was my instructor. So I know how to play it. I just never disciplined myself. Why? Because I failed to be who God wants me to be. us have desperately failed. I get ticked at myself when I say something to my wife, and she's just trying to do her job and make my job better, but it didn't go the way I wanted, so I say something stupid. Now, none of you ever have that problem. Right. Some of you look at me like, well, I don't. You got bigger problems. Folks, we all know that we are created to be something so much greater, so much more than what we presently are. This next quote really, really explains a lot. It's highlighted in red from Richard Pratt. Think about how natural it is for you to rebel against God. Think about how natural it is for you to rebel against God. Consider how easily you come under sin's influence. We do not have to devise ways to turn away from God. We do not have to plan to do it. All we have to do is drop our guard, and sin inflicts its damaging blows. For example, what do you have to do to ruin your family? What is required to obliterate the bonds that hold your home together? In our fallen world, simply let nature take its course. Sin will prevail, and your family will be destroyed. What do you have to do to grow cold in your relationship with Christ? What must you do to ruin your walk with Him? You don't have to do anything. Sin still seeks to master you. And if you don't conscientiously resist it, your walk with Christ will grow ice cold. That is the battle that we all have every minute of every day to be fully human. To be people, to be men and women who were created and designed in God's image to really give glory to God, is the only way it's going to happen is if we fight and battle and struggle and stay on top of things and ask daily and minutely for the God of the universe to give us His Spirit to be the people He created us to be. Because I know for a fact that I can be preaching and I'm going, wow, Keith, you're really saying some really great stuff. And then I'll see someone and an evil thought will come into my mind while I'm preaching to you. And all of you are going, is it me, Lord? That's how evil we are. 1 minute giving great glory to God, and 1 second later doing... And if you don't think that's true from a scriptural standpoint, I double dog dare you to look at Matthew chapter 16, in which Peter says something like, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And God, and Jesus goes, man, it's spot on. God gave that to you. And the minute Jesus says about what he's going to go to Jerusalem and die, Peter says, no, not you, Lord. Get behind me, Satan. I mean, it's not 2 minutes later. God reveals to fallen man that he has failed to be what he was created to be. And as a result, we become like the mere animals. I'd like to read this last quote. It's from Blaise Pascal, the French mathematician who has, man, this week alone, I think there was 10 quotes from Blaise Pascal that really just spoke to my heart, but I've weeded it down to just a couple. Who is not happy at not being a king except the deposed king? All of these miseries of man prove man's greatness. They are miseries of a deposed king. Listen, folks. You've all heard the story of the guy who got his hand hurt in a press. And he says, Doc, will I be able to play the violin? He says, oh, absolutely, it'll heal. Well, that's good because I couldn't play it before. You've never heard that joke? Listen. Who's worried about losing their ability to do something except those who have possession of it? Who's worried about losing the status except those who have possession? One of the things you ought to do is go to a third world country and work for about a week or two there and realize how happy the people are, especially how happy the children are, and they don't even have a Wii. In fact, you go to Haiti and say, do you have a Wii? Wii, Wii. Yes, I don't have a Wii. What's a we? But because we have so much, when we lose it, we know we've lost it. You all are royalty, created in the image of God, given authority to be rulers over the universe. And in our depravity, And in our lostness, it's gone. And we all know it at the very core of our being. Let's go on. 3, God will hold man accountable for his failure. Verse 15, what has already been and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. He endowed us, he gifted us with these abilities so that we would make expression of them on the planet. That's why he planted us here. Be his royal ambassadors, to be the people that were given authority in order to guide this world so that we could turn it from a jungle into a garden. That's what we've been endowed with. That's the power we've been given. And folks, listen, one of the things that we need to understand is that the God of the universe expects us to take the world as we find it and transform it into a better place, to transform it into the likeness of what he created this world to be, even though it's a long and tireless and really we'll never see it fully done in our lifetime. We're to do it anyway because the God of the universe has commanded us to do it. And sometimes he asks us to take hold of things that we don't like. Sometimes he asks us to be involved in ministries or be involved in doing his work in a way that we go, this is a waste. But the God of the universe has the ability to redeem everything if we'll just see it in its time. If we'll just see it the way he sees it. Some of you may not understand what a transformation has taken place in Pastor Keith's life over the last decade. But it's amazing. I actually like gardening now. For 50 years of my life, I thought my wife was wasting her time working with flowers, doing all that kind of stuff. But now I've realized what she's seen all along, that by looking at the different flowers and realizing how they're so unique and so beautiful and how they all work together and how they just come at different times in order to make my life rich all summer long. I see now it, and you know what? For 30 years, actually we've been married 37 years, haven't we? For 37 years, I thought my wife was trying to torment me because she would plant this plant that I spent my whole childhood trying to eradicate, thistles. She would plant them in our flower garden. And I only, my recollection of thistles was going up and down the fields of my dad's farm, being paid 10 cents an hour, if you can comprehend that, to take all those thistles out of there in a manner to make sure that when they looked over the soybeans or they looked over the corn, there was no thistles. And my wife is planting them. Until about 4 years ago, I looked at a thistle flower and went, oh. The God of the universe has people, has situations, has environments in your life right now that you think stink, that you think are unredeemable, that you think that the God of the universe has got you in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. Nothing could be further from the truth. You've been placed there because the God of the universe wants you to understand your divine calling, wants you to understand your divine status, wants you to understand your divine authority, and to bring down that which is heaven here on earth, to make God's will that is in heaven and to make it here on earth. Just like he told the Adam and Eve in the garden to till and cultivate it and take control of it. This is a jungle we live in. And the only difference between a jungle and a garden is that a jungle has been managed in order to make it a garden. It's the same items. Some of you are having a hard time comprehending this. I'll give you time to catch up. Listen, everything you can find in my garden, you can find in the wild. It's just not in rows and cultivated and allowed to be flourishing. The same is true with your world that you're living in. The reason it's a jungle is because it's unmanaged. We've failed to do what God has asked us to do in allowing his world to be the way he created it to be. Okay, conclusion is this. How does a relationship with Christ help restore mankind's privileged nature? A, Jesus helps us recognize the fallen, corrupt, and depraved nature of our present thinking. God tests them, verse 18, so that they may see that they are like animals. please, that's what Psalm 49 is trying to get us to recognize. Please understand that if we divorce ourselves from God, if we leave God behind in our daily decision making, if we leave God behind in the way that we conduct things and we try to organize things and try to do things, we're going to think that our lives is just an animal's life, running our little cage, trying to keep it moving fast enough in order to generate whatever we need to generate to survive. But as long as we continue to think divorced from God, we're going to live like the animals. We're going to continue to live existence like animals. And in fact, unless we can instill that in our children, they'll live their lives like animals. I'd like to read this quote. I've read it before, but it's been a couple of years since I've done it, so some of you college students will find this fascinating. Those of you who have heard it before, just recognize what it is and what it's saying. The Minnesota Crime Commission, back in the late 70s, made this statement. This is straight out of the scriptures. I don't know if the guy that was the head of this department was a Christian or not, but this is just spot on. This is what the Minnesota Crime Commission said back in the late 70s. Every baby starts life as a little savage. He is completely selfish and self-centered. He wants what he wants when he wants it. His bottle, his mother, attention, his playmate's toy, or his uncle's watch. Deny him these and he seethes with rage and aggressiveness, which would be murderous were he not so helpless. He is dirty. He has no words, no knowledge, no skills. This means that all children, not just certain children, but all children are born delinquent. And if you're a parent, you know that's true. If permitted to continue in the self-centered world of his infancy, given free rein to his impulsive acting to satisfy his wants, every child would grow up to be a criminal, a thief, a killer, a rapist. And if you don't believe I'm true, that's true, talk to parents with young children, or especially talk to daycare workers. It is hard work to raise children. Hard work. You've got to turn them from someone who is, by their depravity and by their sinfulness, separated from God, and we need to turn them into what they were created and designed to be, people in the image of God. And the problem is, with all the skills and abilities we were given as people created in God's image, that means we have creative abilities, we have rational abilities, we have thinking abilities, we have all sorts of skills that we can use to evil just as well as towards good. Folks, you know that's true. Look at any new technology that's developed, and within hours after it's come out and made available, somebody's found a way to twist it around and pervert it. The internet is almost all that now. I mean, there's a big constant battle to stop the corruption on the internet. Why? Because it's a power. And we have the amazing ability to turn it towards our own vices. B. There is one who knows the eternal spirit of man. And that's why having a relationship with Christ can make all the difference in the world, because he knows what we're like. He knows the eternal destiny that we're all headed towards. Look, it says, the question in verse 21, who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down to earth? I know who knows. Jesus knows. And he's trying to get us on board with what we are designed to be. He's trying to get us on board to our eternal destiny, and that's to live forever with God in heaven. But we're not headed there if we continue in our darkness. That's why, folks, I don't know if you caught what I saw in John chapter 3. And you know what? As you develop more and more of a Hebrew mind, and reading the scriptures, especially the Old Testament, will develop a Hebrew mind for you all. Because a Hebrew mind is able to integrate all sorts of information together and think of it all as a collective rather than just one topic and one theme. And one of the really cool things is to take passages like John chapter 3 and look at it through the grid of God redeeming the world through his son Jesus, wanting to restore mankind to his high and holy privilege, you know, high and holy status. And what does Jesus say? I've come to give you new birth. Not born of the flesh, but born of the spirit like you originally were. I've come to take you out of the darkness and allow you to be into the light, where you can see things as they really are and not just shadows. Anyway, Jesus is the one who knows we're eternal. Jesus is the one that can take us to where we need to be. See, What does that relationship with Jesus do to help us? If unregenerate mankind can experience the satisfaction and contentment man was designed to enjoy, then how much more as a result of restored humanity? In other words, if Jane Sinek and Joe Pagan can enjoy life in this planet, how much more should we who are believers who understand what things out really are and where they really should be? That's part of the development my wife has been excited to see in me. I'm starting to become a real Christian. Yes, right. In the last 10 years, I've started to really enjoy food. Whereas for the first 45, 50 years of my life, food was only a necessary evil to slow me down in order to give me the energy to make it another 6 hours so that I could have enough fuel to make it the next 6 hours. I'll never forget my dad. We were, remember this in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and my dad was taking us, our whole family, to Lancaster to watch the creation, Noah story on big theater thing. And we were sitting down to eat before we were going to the theater in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I was doing like I always do, just shoving down the food, get ready to go do something. You know, because food was just something you had to do every once in a while in order to keep going. And my dad looked across the table at me and says, "What's your hurry, boy?" He'd never said that to me. When we were farmers, kids. And, you know, we had four kids in our family, and Mom would put out the food for three, and you had to work fast. And my dad looked across the table to me like, "What are you doing?" "I'm eating." "Why are you eating so fast?" Do you remember that? Oh, man, I do. And I thought, I don't know. And now I taste the bites. I taste the flavors that the God of the universe has created for my enjoyment. Huh. And your enjoyment. I taste the variety. I taste the difference in the mixtures. Why? Because every good and perfect gift has come from my Father just to make me happy. Do you understand that? That everything that God has provided in this world is for your enjoyment. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. And if Joe Pagan and Jane Sinek can enjoy the things of this world, how much more should I when I realize that my Father has given them for me to make my life rich? That's why I like thistles in their proper place. And there's a time for everything. And when we understand the times and we start to live in harmony with the God of the universe and what He's designed and created you to be, your life becomes richer. Your life becomes fuller. You start to see things that you didn't see before. You start to stop and smell the roses that you just thought were there in order to make your lover love you more. Oh, maybe that was a little too close to home, huh? You know, roses really have a scent. If unregenerate mankind can experience the satisfaction and contentment man was designed to enjoy, then how much more as a result of restored humanity? D, there is one who can restore man, even Jesus. Look at verse 22. Who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Now, there's a lot of different ways we could take that verse, but I'm taking it this way, that Jesus is the one who can understand who we are. In fact, we sang it today. Why would God bother with us? Why would He extend amazing grace to us? You know what? For years and years and years, I used to think, yeah, why would God bother with us? I'm starting to get a clue as to why. Because He sees something in us that we can't see in ourselves. He sees what we could be if we would become refined, if we would become restored, if we would become renewed, if we would become regenerate, if we would allow the Spirit of God to come in and touch us and restore us and renew us to become the men and women that He designed us to become. That's why God goes to the cross. That's why God is patient with us. That's why God is merciful to us, because He's hoping that He might be able to restore us to that which He created us to be. And He must think a whole lot of us, because folks, we're pretty disgusting from time to time. We are. But he sees something in us and how we can be restored. My worship point is this. Don't you know who you are? Don't you know what God created you to be? Don't you know the noble creature you were designed to be? Don't you know the royal work that God created you to do? Have you failed to realize the exalted countenance and peace you were made to enjoy? When you begin to realize what you are supposed to be, and then compare that with what you really, where you really are, you not only become more aware of God's grace, patience, mercy, forgiveness, and love, but recognizing this also causes us to worship God the Creator. So worship. Realize what you are. Realize how the God of the universe wants to allow you to become all that you're created to be. My spiritual challenge is this. Don't ever be content with where you are until your character, nature, and life is one of total love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. In other words, until you're conformed to the image of Christ. The God of the universe sent his son Jesus as a sheep, which we all are in our natural state, in order to redeem us so that we could become like he is when Pilate said, "Behold the man." That we could be noble creatures doing noble work, restoring the world to where it needs to be in order for God to reign the way he created us to reign and for us to be a part of that. I love this fourth verse of the song, Divine, All Loves Excelling. This is what the fourth verse says. Finish then thy new creation, pure and spotless let us be. Let us see thy great salvation perfectly restored in thee. Change me from glory into glory till in heaven we take our place, till we cast our thrones before thee, lost in wonder, love, and praise. Back in the 1960s, my uncle on my mom's side owned a landfill in Lenawee County. It was called Lenawee Disposal. And he would service all the big companies in Lenawee County and a lot of the residences in Lenawee County. In fact, Fisher Body and Tecumseh Products and stuff were part of his accounts. And Fisher Body made the car seats for automobiles. And in fact, one of the really, really cool things that would take place is my grandmother would get the leftover rolls of vinyl, because when they got down to like that much vinyl, they couldn't finish a seat, so they'd throw the whole rest of the roll away. Well, my grandmother would take this junk, this wasted stuff, and make coats and purses and everything else out of it. The entire Stucker family, that's my mom's side of the family, the entire Stucker family had vinyl coats made out of car seats. Because my grandmother just got all these free resources, restored. Well, my brother and I would go to my cousin's house and they'd say, "Hey, you want to go to landfill and go treasure hunt?" I mean, we couldn't resist that. We're farm boys. It smelled bad, but still, you know. And you know what was really fascinating was go through all the junk and see what was thrown away and find every once in a while some treasures that we'd pull out of that place. Some of you are looking like, "Boy, Pastor Keith, you had a boring childhood, didn't you?" Well, it's actually pretty exciting. But every once in a while, we'd come across something that we knew was at one time very, very expensive and very, very refined. Because you could tell by the artwork, you could tell by the materials it was made out of, even in its compressed and you know, when they were all that, it still had its beauty. And you could tell it, just even there among the junk, you could tell it still had its beauty. Do you understand that's what we are? We've been crushed in the compactor of life, run over by the bulldozer of circumstances, and yet we still have an innate beauty that's there, that God wants to restore and renew, a lot like my grandmother used to do. And she was the wife of a superintendent of a conference of the church that's around this area. She understood what it was to renew and restore that which is broken and lost. Folks, all of us have that divine image stamped on us. And even though we're in the disposal landfill of life, the God of the universe wants to come and pull you out of your circumstances and begin the process of renewing you and restoring you to become all that God created you to be. And a lot of you are bored, wanting to get out of here and go to dinner. But I'm here to tell you, you'll never enjoy dinner properly until you understand who you are created in God's image. You'll never live life properly until you understand who you are created in God's image. This quote I want to end with. The glory of God. This is from St. Irenaeus, who is, a disciple of John, St. John. The glory of God is a human being fully alive. The glory of God is a human being fully alive. God is most glorified when we are most like what He created us to be. Dave, I'm going to go ahead and abort. Sorry. Took too long. I have a benediction that I would like to go through with you all. Please stand. I'll read the pastor part. If you would please respond by reading the all part. It is not to angels that He has subjected the world to come, about which we are speaking. This is from Hebrews chapter 2, verses 5 through 11. But there is a place where someone has testified. Ooh, I'll let you catch up. Here we go. It is not to angels that He has subjected the world to come, about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified. What is man that You are mindful of him, the Son of Man, that You care for him? You made Him a little lower than the angels. You crowned Him with glory and honor and put everything under His feet. In putting everything under Him, God left nothing that is not subject to Him. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to Him. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor because He suffered death, so that by the grace of God He might taste death for everyone. In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. You are brothers and sisters of Christ, co-heirs with Christ, if you have accepted Him into your life. Now may you fully understand who you are, created in God's image, and may you go from this point now and forever and live like it. Amen.